Good morning, CHD. Welcome to Pediatric Perspectives, where we are looking at children's health challenges from a different perspective, one that includes critical thinking and one where we are not afraid to give you the honest truth. We are honoring April Autism Awareness Month on this episode, and my guest today is a dear friend, Richard Moskowitz. Welcome, Richard, to the show.
Thanks, Paul. Nice to be here.
You are someone I wished I had known a long time ago. You've been doing, as a family doc, I think over 50 years before you retired not too long ago.
Right.
And you became aware of challenges with our mainstream medical system long before I did. So you've been practicing holistic medicine, homeopathy. I really got to appreciate you when I read your book, Vaccines, A Reappraisal, which was 2017, and what a masterpiece for folks who want a really thorough look at vaccines. That book is as relevant today as it was the day you wrote it back in 2017.
Oh, well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate that.
So I thought we would just dive into autism because that was going to be our topic for this episode. And I know you address it a little bit in your book. I want to take you back, though, before we do that, to when you were in medical school. So I was in medical school in the early 80s. My guess is you were in medical school in the 70s?
No, in the 60s.
In the 60s? You don't look that old.
I'm 85.
Wow. Wow. That is such an honor, because I think what we lose today, young doctors and young families growing up in today's world, we lose perspective. And, you know, I grew up in Africa, and as a kid all the way through high school in Africa, I didn't see a single case of autism. I'm wondering what your childhood was like and your experience in medical school and residency as relates to autism.
Never heard of it. I never saw a case. I started seeing it, well, when I moved from Santa Fe to Boston in the 80s, I started seeing it a little bit.
Yeah.
And more so in recent years. So it's definitely picked up alongside of other neurological problems like learning disabilities and sensory disabilities and all sorts of things like, Guillain-Barré syndrome and other things that were rare,
right,
but are not rare anymore.
Yeah. And I think this is important for our listeners to understand what you just shared and what I've been sharing as well. This is something new. This is something different. And for so long, since the 80s, the NIH, the governmental institutions that are supposed to be looking out for the health of our children, put all their money into genetic research. And they've tried to this day to make a case that, autism's always been with us. It's genetic. What do you say to that?
First of all, I want to say this, that I think we're paying too much time on specific diagnoses. I agree. The whole thing about autism is fraught and important because there are so many more cases of it now. But I think it's a distraction that is being used, because what I see about vaccines is about the vaccination process per se. It's not about this vaccine causing that complication, but rather a nonspecific reaction on the part of the patient in a way that's peculiar to the patient, but yet is true of every vaccine. So it sort of gets lost in the shuffle for that reason. You don't see it because we're so focusing on specific vaccines and specific diseases.
Yeah.
And what we really need to study is the all-cause morbidity and mortality, because that's what I'm seeing is like you give a vaccine and it makes worse the chronic illness that's already there. And it doesn't matter which vaccine it is or which disease it is or how severely the patient suffers from it. It's just this pattern is identical, but it's hard to see because we're not looking there.
Yeah. I'll get back to that. In your chapter on brain damage, I think it was chapter 6 in your book.
Yes.
I think it's important, this sort of emphasizes what you were just saying, is that it's not just autism, folks. We have children today are chronically ill with a host of challenges. And the brain ones you cover in chapter 6, you know, we've got autism, we've got ADD, ADHD, we've got neurodevelopmental stuff, learning problems, right? And you go over the incidence of those things, which changed over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. If you add them all up together, they now constitute more than 25% of all children, which I find difficult to believe, but there it is in black and white.
Yep. It is a tragedy, and it is so unnecessary. I can't remember if I read it in your book or I've had you on my show once before, but you made a statement that I'd like you to reemphasize, and that is, in your practice, you would have children who developed a condition, some chronic brain condition, for example, and with your work that you were doing, you would help them recover from it, and then they would get a vaccine and get it right back.
Yes. Yes.
Explain that a little bit, because I think it speaks to cause and effect.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm driving at, is that, you know, if the kid needs to be well for a period of months and then they get the vaccine and within a week or two, they're right back to square one. If they're not well, if they're just being controlled with suppressive drugs or antibiotics, you won't see it, because the chronic illnesses wax and wane idiosyncratically. That it's very difficult to be sure. But if the kid is well, and then, you know, then they're subjected to another vaccine, it's as clear as day, and the parent sees it, and even the doctor sees it. So, the best example I can give is I saw a young girl, and it's all through elementary school. She was wetting the bed, and she had OCD, something fierce. And I was treating her homeopathically, and it finally kicked in, and she was fine. She was well for over 10 years with hardly any symptoms at all, and flourishing beautifully. And then it came time for her to go to college, and the college insisted on an MMR booster. Within a week, all of her old symptoms came back, identical, exactly the same.
Wow.
And fortunately, the same medicine that helped her as a child helped her again. And she was fine. And she went to, I think it was Bryn Mawr, and she finished with a superb average. And she did fine. And she's been fine since. So that was the sort of paradigmatic example. But I saw dozens, hundreds of cases just like that, with different diseases, different vaccines, but the pattern was identical. And it belonged to the patient, so that, you know, in our present way of thinking, it would be easy to dismiss it as an idiosyncrasy of the patient. So it doesn't get in the statistics.
Yeah. I share that experience. I've had many, many children. The most classic severe cases would be a child with severe autism that happened after a vaccine or a series of vaccines. Many times it was the MMR. And then they would recover. And this was actually happening in other practices. And then they would come to join my practice because they'd been talked into giving another MMR at the 4 to 6 year old age group, and they regressed again into even more severe. Mm-hmm. And it was like, we can't do this any longer. It is not just the MMR. So we'll talk about all vaccines in a little bit, but I wanted, while we're on that, just to touch a little bit on the history of why there was a concern with MMR. Can you speak to that at all?
Oh, sure. That's Andy Wakefield.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. He was a gastroenterologist, and he was interested in kids with irritable bowel syndrome and Crohn's disease and colitis and so forth. He did a study that showed that people who had been vaccinated with the MMR were much more likely to develop those illnesses later in life. So that was what got him started. And he started doing biopsies, intestinal biopsies of these kids. And he found that that there were autoantibodies to the vaccines in the biopsies. And so, you know, that freaked him out. And yeah, that changed his life.
Yeah, it so did. He famously wrote that up in The Lancet back in 1998 and ultimately was crucified for it for no good reason. Right. I mean, they just threw falsehoods at him that he was unethical, which was ridiculous. The right. data stands to this day. It's been replicated. Right. But to this day, he's a scapegoat, really. He's a brilliant man, an incredible scientist, ethical beyond. I remember asking him, Andy, because I've gotten to know him. We've attended conferences and spoken together at conferences. How did you endure all the abuse you took? You know, because he just always seemed to be such a gentleman. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, he says, Paul, we do this for the kids. I mean, yeah. The suffering I've gone through is nothing compared to what these families and these children have to go yep. through with a child who's severely injured. And it doesn't have to be that way. So I just want, thank you for sharing that history, because you can go to Wikipedia and they still trash him to this day.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. And yet he's such a hero. So I think the biggest challenge so many people have with the vaccine issue and chronic disease itself is you'll hear this, you know, the pro-vaccine community will say, well, correlation doesn't mean causation.
Right.
And what do you say to that?
Well, you know, there are interesting studies that have been done. You know, when I realized what I was saying before, that the tendency of vaccines to promote chronic diseases is not a side effect. It's not an accident. It's built into the design of the vaccines themselves. For example, you know, I remember I had a kid that she had terrible ear infections, she was fine with homeopathy. She got better and she was doing great. It started out from the DPT. That was the first one. And then, you know, she was fine and the parents separated and the father insisted on taking her for the MMR and it brought it right back, the same thing. So it didn't matter which vaccine it was. It was hers. It was her particular way of doing it. So I started combing the literature and I started finding studies like there was a study that showed that the infant mortality rate, the death rate of infants in the first year of life was directly proportional to the number of vaccines that were received. When it came to the low end, which was Japan, and the high end, which was the United States, it was over twice as much. And it was directly proportional to the number of vaccines that were given. And there yeah. were similar studies that showed that the rate of admissions to the emergency room and the deaths and the incidence of various autoimmune diseases was likewise proportional to the number of vaccines that the children had. And they even carried it forward for a number of years. And they also found that it had to do with the number of vaccines that were given simultaneously at a single visit. So all of these studies seem to be showing that it didn't matter which vaccine you gave. It mattered simply how many of them you got.
Yeah. So I think that's a great start to answering that question about causation. You need multiple studies, which we now have many, many studies showing the link. And then we need to have a mechanism of injury or, you know, a scientific reason that this would make sense. And of course, now we have that with thimerosal, mercury toxicity, aluminum, immune activating, and the immune activation of just multiple vaccines, as you mentioned.
Plus, we have, you know, many studies on aluminum that show brain damage from aluminum. The aluminum that's used as an adjuvant readily crosses the blood-brain barrier, either whether it's hooked up to a protein or not, and this information just is buried. I mean, it's the safety studies that so-called that are done. The ones that are done by the CDC are essentially micromanaged by the drug industry. The CDC has become essentially the mouthpiece of the drug industry.
We have basically junk science being promoted as science in the whole vaccine industry. Not a single vaccine on the schedule has had proper science done with a real placebo.
There are a couple other things too that they do. First of all, The lead supervisor has absolute authority to determine whether a given reaction is or is not vaccine related, according to standards which are never specified. They only interview you about reactions that have already been established as possibly vaccine related. So if it's something new that isn't on the list, it gets automatically thrown out. And if it happens more than 14 days after the vaccine, it tends to get thrown out. In other words, the chronic dimension is completely ignored.
Right.
And that's the dimension in which most of them occur.
This has to frustrate you. It certainly frustrates me. We've been caring for kids during the generations where their health is just deteriorating in front of our eyes. We're aware that the vaccines are a huge piece of this puzzle. We're not saying it's the only piece, but it's a huge piece.
Right. But they're required of everybody.
And they're mandated, which, by the way, for viewers, unless you live in those few states that do not have a religious or philosophical exemption, even though they're mandated, even though the school tells you you have to have it for your child to go to school, you can get a religious or a philosophical exemption. And you should, if that's your desire, other than those handful of states that have gotten away with those exemptions. But I just sitting in front of a man who's been in this world for practicing medicine as long as you have and taking care of kids, what's the answer going forward? You know, as you look back on your career and how this all progressed, I remember when I was in med school, I thought the CDC was the pinnacle of, you know, the most smartest docs. They're doing all this great work. And now I'm aware that at least when it comes to vaccines and infectious diseases, it's a sham. It's just a charade.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a problem that's not just in vaccines. It's all the entire medical research establishment is done this way. So it's the drug companies. They've achieved what the petroleum industry has achieved with the federal agencies that are supposed to be regulating it. This is a big, huge corruption problem that our entire system is rigged with, and it just needs to change. We need to have an independent federal agency that regulates drugs, vaccines, and so forth.
In the meantime, because I don't see that happening anytime soon, what's your recommendation for parents?
Don't. Don't
so, could you speak a little bit to the natural immune system?
Yes, absolutely. And by the way, I've never said to parents, don't. I don't feel that's right. I if they ask me questions, I will say why I think what I think. But I totally respect people who choose something different. I'm not trying to lay that on them.
Yeah, and full disclaimer, folks, neither of us are telling you what to do. We don't diagnose or treat. We're both retired, but we're giving you information, and you can take this information right. And hopefully make good use of it.
To me, the main thing to realize, for parents to realize, is that the formative experience of the immune system is learning how to deal with acute sickness. The measles, you get a high fever, and we need to think about the way the body responds to that. It sensitizes the epithelium that they come in so that they can sneeze and cough it out the same way as it came in. The wandering phagocytes are wandering in the blood and finding the virus and digesting it and throwing it away. And there are cytokine proteins that help them do that, that signal where to go. And then the antibodies come at the end, and they're like the frosting on the cake. They assist in the phagocytosis. And the result of all of this outpouring of these various parts of the immune system is that the invading virus or bacterium is expelled from the body. And the memory of that resides in the host cells of the immune system, such that if that organism comes back in the future and there's an epidemic of it, it's not going to happen. Whereas the vaccine, that's acute. That's an acute illness. Whereas the vaccine, we don't really think about this enough. The vaccine is a chronic phenomenon. It's designed to prevent an illness in the future. And so it has the body making antibodies continuously for years and years. How does it do that? How does it manage to do that? Well, it stays inside the body somehow. It would be nice to know exactly how, but the drug industry hasn't been very forthcoming about that information.
So what's your advice? I mean, we're both sort of saying the same thing in that the natural immune system is superior. We need to go back to that. There's nothing to fear. What is your advice to parents who are afraid of going back to the dark ages? Because you lived through it, and what can you tell them about it? How scary would it be if we were to not vaccinate at all?
Well, it's true that, you know, some people would die. That is true. That's where the medical care comes in. I mean, we need to help those people, and I think we can do that. I think there are perfectly good, reasonable ways to do that. It's not going to eliminate it entirely. Still, people are occasionally going to die from acute infections, definitely.
But put that in proportion and perspective compared to those who are dying from the vaccines, the SIDS cases, et cetera. I mean, how is it the scale on the balance of that?
It's not even close, because with a chronic illness, it's like you're taking out a loan on your house and you're paying it back throughout your life with interest. So, you know, it doesn't add up.
You started off with the infant mortality data. The more vaccines, the countries giving the most vaccines have the highest infant mortality. Those are deaths, folks, caused by vaccines. We know there's a direct correlation between SIDS, sudden infant death, and a vaccine. Most of it happens in the week to 10 days after vaccines. So either way, there can be deaths. But from my calculations, sounds like you agree. There's going to be more deaths in the vaccinated group, and then there's going to be way more morbidity, the chronic diseases. Yeah. So it just doesn't add up anymore.
Just a little footnote about the COVID and the mRNA vaccines. That's a whole new idea, because there, instead of the vaccine staying in your body for a long, long time, supposedly, the mRNA is inactivated very quickly, and so it doesn't stay in your body for a long time. And the trouble with that idea, even to the extent that it's true, and by the way, it's not completely true, because there is some reverse transcription. It can get into the DNA as well, so it becomes permanent, and even given to our offspring. But to the extent that that's true, it means that the information doesn't stay in the body for a long time, which means that it's designed purely for a short-term thing, for an illness that's already in the population. This is the first time we've given a vaccine for an illness that's happening right now.
What would you tell parents about the COVID vaccine specifically for their children, and then vaccines in general?
Well, as for the COVID, I would say stop. And actually, most people have stopped. It's not catching on. That's the good fortune of it, that this is helping people rethink the whole idea of vaccines. The chronic vaccines, the vaccines that are designed to stay in the body for a long time and continue doing their thing, that's a bad idea. For the other reason that we spoke about, is that that's promoting chronic disease, period. We know that. There's good evidence for that. So we just need to publicize it more, and for people to stop thinking that vaccines are the greatest thing since sliced bread. There is a downside to them that we're not looking at. Yeah. And that's the most important thing.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Thank you, Dr. Moskowitz, for being on our show today, for your incredible book that people can get. And I look forward to speaking to you again in the future.
Great. Thanks, Paul. Me too.
You can check out my other show, With the Wind, at doctorsinscience.com. You can also reach me directly, even book a coaching session if you wish, at kidsfirstforever.com, the number 4. Both these links are in the show notes. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next week. I look forward to running together with the wind at our backs, revealing the science that gives clarity in our world that's full of propaganda and misinformation. Visit our website, doctorsinscience.com. Sign up. Donate if you can. Your support makes a difference. And let's make this the weekly show the world has been waiting for. Thanks for watching. I'm Dr. Paul.